This is John Nesbitt with another chapter in our Passing Parade, and our review this time will be taken from the medical and legal records which describe a mysterious and terrible woman. After a moment, we come to the story once written in headlines which gave the name of Typhoid Mary to the American Passing Parade. On the reviewing stand, to deal with this somewhat blood-curdling case, I'll have to follow the lines of a detective story, except that I'll try to stick to the facts. This life adventure will take 2 days in the telling, so both this and our next broadcast will be required. For the first clue, we must learn a couple of facts about typhoid fever. Within living memory, this sickness was once rampant everywhere in the United States. Generally speaking, typhoid is a poor man's disease. Where you can afford a good home with cleanliness and pure water and so on, typhoid rarely gets in. So when in the summer of 1900, an epidemic of typhoid burst out in the suburb of New York called Mamaroneck, it was a matter of astonishment to the health department. Yet the children of wealthy parents, playing with their nursemaids on the broad green family lawns, and particularly teenagers, were suddenly burned up with fever and dying. Now up from New York comes a health detective, his name Dr. George A. Soper. We must remember that name with honor, for he was a very brave man. Yet at Mamaroneck he failed. The epidemic stopped, and he had nothing to hunt. 2 years passed, and the killer struck again. This time the epidemics broke out on the estate of the Drayton family at Dark Harbor, Maine, then at Sands Point, at Oyster Bay, and finally Tuxedo Park. And as before, there was only one dim clue: the fact that the bereaved families were rich, cultured people. As the reports flowed in, Dr. Soper held his head in his hands at his desk and muttered, "It is almost as if some diabolical human who hated rich people was traveling about and putting typhoid into the food or water of their children." And that notion, wild as it sounds, held the terrible truth. Yet no case of a human carrier of this disease had ever been listed in the annals of medicine. Up to the great estates, returned Dr. Soper. To every family struck by the illness, he asked these questions. Who were your visitors? Give me a list of their names, a list of the names of your servants, and of everyone entering your house. Then he took these lists and he laid them side by side. Visitors so-and-so-and-so-and-so, gardener George, coachman Sylvester, cook Mary, second maid Nora, downstairs maid Dora. Family B, visitors so-and-so, gardener Tony, coachman Andrew, cook Mary, downstairs maid Olga. Family C, gardener Stuart, butler Henry, cook Mary, downstairs maid Margaret, second maid Sylvia. He made up a number of these lists, and the instant he set them side by side, he had his answer. One name was on all the lists, the name Mary. Mary Mallon, cook. In all cases, Mary's employers had been sympathetic to her, and when, naturally enough, in a house afflicted by typhoid, she had resigned, they had given her a good bonus and a warm letter of recommendation, and then they buried their children. Now Dr. Soper put a revolver into his pocket, and he went in to make his capture. From the employment agencies, he found Mary Mallon's address. Then, because he was a scientist as well as a manhunter, he took with him a woman doctor named Josephine Baker. He wished to examine Mary Mallon, and out of human consideration, he employed another woman, a woman to do the job. With this woman doctor, he now goes and knocks on the kitchen door of a mansion on New York City's Park Avenue. A woman, about 38 years of age, spotlessly dressed, opens the door. She beams a warm Irish smile. She is sweet-faced, short and plump, with a fine complexion and honest blue eyes. And she stands there, a good cook, proud of her spotless kitchen, holding the screen door open. "And what can I do for you?" Dr. Soper gazes at her a moment. "Your name, I believe, is Mary Mallon." The cook smiles. "Why, sure, Mary Mallon it is." "Then I would like to talk with you, Mary Mallon. I am from the Department of Health." The white-gowned woman at the door stiffens, a frozen expression fixes itself, the blue eyes bulge. Without a word, she lurches back and slams the door. For the first moment in the case of Mary Mallon, there now appears the violence in this woman's nature which would make her one of the notorious headline figures of her day. And we'll continue in a moment with the story of this agent of death in the Passing Parade. This is John Nesbitt following the Mellon case again, which now finds us with Dr. Soper and Dr. Baker standing outside a closed kitchen door. Dr. Josephine Baker reaches for the door and Soper stops her. No, she may be dangerous. Wait. They return a short while later, joined by three policemen, an ambulance, and six interns trained in the use of the straitjacket. Hundreds of people on Park Avenue stop. A crowd forms in front of the mansion. The medical detectives and police burst in and dash through the huge old house. Mary Mellon has disappeared. The searchers ransack the building. And out in a narrow cement service yard, a policeman shoves over a large garbage can. And from it bursts the body of Mary Mellon, doubled up like a trapped wild animal. But again, like an animal, she turns to attack. She lunges at Dr. Baker with a huge cooking fork. But the interns and police close in, and a moment later, Mary Mellon, kicking and shrieking, is carried to the ambulance, snapped into a straitjacket, and tied down to the stretcher. And as the ambulance screams through New York streets, the doctor rides in with Mary Mellon and shoves a needle into her arm and gives the sedative. And Mary's quiet then. She stares up at him. Are you taking me to prison to hang me? The reply of that doctor, who sits looking down sadly at this shackled woman, may astonish you. For he said, why, no, Mary, we're simply taking you to the hospital. Says Mary, weeping suddenly, I didn't kill them children, I didn't. The doctor says, Mary, I think you may carry death around with you without knowing it. Mary looks up. Oh, dear Mother of God, let me die. Let me die. The story of Mary Mellon now becomes a tragedy rather than a mystery story. But as the years go by, it will change again to a sinister drama more concerned with police than with medicine. At the contagious ward of Bellevue Hospital, Mary Mellon's frightful sense of guilt was lifted from her. For upon examination, they found her innocent of deliberate murder. She was a victim of what is fortunately one of the rarest tragedies known to science. Although perfectly healthy herself, she was a human carrier of typhoid. But at least she could now know that she wasn't a murderess. Mary Mellon, it was realized, was a simple-minded and very ignorant woman. She had vaguely sensed that she was connected with the outbreaks of typhoid in the various families. She had nervously quit and moved on, thinking superstitiously that it was some kind of evil luck she brought with her. And that is why, when the doctors first spoke to her, she had flown into such a tantrum. She had one chance, however. By submitting to a rather critical operation, the organ in her body which carried the germs might be removed. But Mary was terrified of doctors, and she flatly refused to submit to the surgeon. And so strongly do American laws guard the rights of the individual that legally this woman could not be operated upon without her consent. So Mary Mellon was given her choice of medical operation or isolation as a prisoner on North Brother Island. Mary chose North Brother Island. This place is a mound of rock covered with buildings, and you can see it from your automobile as you cross the Triborough Bridge on New York's East River. In the year 1907, Mary went to that island. Constantly, she pled for release, and earnest lawyers fought in the courts for her. Finally, on February 19, 1910, this woman, now gray and marked by her long ordeal, although just 43, was brought from the island, and she was set free, for she now gave her solemn oath never to prepare food for others. She had no difficulty about making a living, since there was wide sympathy for her, and dozens of jobs were found and offered her which were entirely safe in regard to the public. And as the years went by, from time to time, Mary would drop into the health department and chat cheerfully and in a friendly way with Dr. Josephine Baker and the staff, and she would always thank them for their great understanding. Alas for them. They did not understand her quite well enough. 5 years went by. On February 12th in 1915, an uptown maternity hospital in New York hired a new cook, and the new cook was a dandy. The food was superb, and the patients, who were young mothers with their babies at breast, were delighted with the delicacies that now came up from the kitchen on their trays. And down below in the white hospital kitchen, happy as a lark, was a plump, pleasant-looking woman with a clear complexion and bright blue eyes. The new hospital cook was Miss Mary Mellon. Mary was now in possession of one of those demons that she believed in her superstitious soul. This time, she was possessed by the demon of revenge on all society. In a moment, we'll return to give the footnote for today's edition, in which we will outline the clues to the second part of the story of Mary Mellon in The Passing Parade. Today's footnote permits us to explain that from time to time, when a story seems to require full-scale length, we will devote two programs to the same theme, as here in the case of Mary Mellon. And in the chapter to come, we will follow the most astounding change in her history, by which she became again a trusted and respectable member of the human family. Until we meet again, this is John Nesbitt saying goodbye to you all.